Hey, and welcome to episode number 18, I think this is, for Circuit Breakers. I have a special guest, Raj Daniels from Open Time, well, formerly from Open Time. So, Raj, who are you and what are you up to now, cool. Now that we know all know you?
Good morning, Jax. Thanks for having me on. And yes, you're right, formerly from Open Time. I did resign last June, so June of 2017.
Whoa, it's been a long time then.
It's almost a year. Yeah. Almost a year, yep. And I've learned a lot in that year. I've learned a lot about what I could have done differently. Open Time was a phenomenal journey. And one of the things you and I kind of touched on before we started recording was that how does a non-technical person start a SaaS startup?
Well, hon, before we go in there, in that direction, what was Open Time exactly like? And then what spawned that idea?
So Open Time was a dream, a vision that I had. If you look for me on the socials, you probably won't find me in many places except for Twitter. I believe that social media, although it's given the feeling that we're more connected, we're not actually more connected. And yes, there's studies come along, and yes, the election came along, and yes, there's a lot of talk right now. Tristan Harris is doing a great job right now about talking about some of the challenges. I was actually speaking about this back in 2014, and I'll give you the impetus for Open Time. I was a chief strategy officer for a healthcare startup. They ran out of funding, and so in May of 2014, I was going to go back into full-time consulting. I'm a strategy consultant by trade, and I went to a consulting company event. Beautiful event, 60, 70 people, white tables, and there were three consultants at my table essentially complaining that, look, we come here, we spend 2-3 hours to get together, but we only get 2 or 3 business cards and we leave. We really can't connect with the individuals that are here. And so, you know, I'm always listening.
Funny. No, real quick. That's funny because, like, you know, right now, more often than not, and I've heard this 3 or 4 times recently in a lot of networking events, which is the polar opposite, right? Mm-hmm. So people are complaining that, you know, it's just a business card event. I got 20 business cards to follow up with at the end of the day. And so, again, to your point, it's either or, like, there's no meaningful conversation.
Right.
And, you know, you and I, especially in the Dallas community, we're the ones who always are happy to go sit down and have coffee with a billion people.
Absolutely.
And sit down and have a meaningful conversation. Yep. And I think I know where this is going, but I'm going to let you finish this shot out. But this is the really funny part to me is it's you either go to an event where you meet no one or you go to an event and you meet a million cool people and you're just like, okay, now I'm overwhelmed. So anyways, continuing on from this consulting event you went to.
So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking it's 2014. You know, there's a lot of technology out there. You know, Facebook is really peaking and LinkedIn's doing its thing, but people are still feeling like they cannot connect. And I'm, to your point, really big on one-on-one connections. I must have sat down in the last few years with over 200 people one-on-one, just having a cup of coffee. And I even usually just subject line my invitations, no transaction, no agenda. Let's just figure out who you are, who I am, and let's just connect, right?
Right.
So I go to this event, and I leave this event, and my mind starts percolating. And I think to myself, look, in this day and age, there's got to be a better way to bring people together. And, you know, to meet one-on-one. And so I start doing research and I can't find anything. And I literally take my laptop to my daughter's gymnastics class and I put together what I would consider an application where I could bring individuals together. And what I mean by that is that, look, to your point about 20 business cards, okay, you got 20 business cards, but how do you know when anyone's available?
Yeah, I mean, none of our calendars, it's great inside a company, our calendars are federated.
Outlook or Gmail or whatever you look, talk, right?
Yeah, but outside of that, no one actually has a clue. And then, you know, there's Calendly and it's kind of kludgy. There's 1,000 other little things like that. There was TimeBridge that I used for a long time.
Acuity scheduling, there's great.
Yeah.
But what I was looking for, and I spent 2014 interviewing individuals, I said, look, if I built something that allowed you to share your time, your open time essentially, with people in your community, how do you feel about that? And they said, we would love to, because not only as individuals, but my company, my organization, my chamber, my school could use this tool. And so I spent 2014 interviewing individuals, and August of 2014, I met someone at La Madeleine Hill locally, and he emailed me through LinkedIn and said, look, are you looking for funding for this idea you have? And at that point, it was just an idea, but I was doing some research, and I didn't know what the funding market looked like. I've never raised money in the past, not from a VC or angel from that perspective. And so I thought, you know, what does this look like? So I showed my wife, and my wife said, you know, are you going to pursue it? And that's when I thought, I don't, well, I mean, I have to now that you asked me this question, right? Like, should I? And she said, I think you should. It's a great idea. And so I went off on the road of pursuing this idea of open time.
That's awesome. So how, again, we touched on it barely mm-hmm. before I asked, you know, idea of open time. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is with open time, if I remember right, you know, the other cool parts of this platform were it would find common interests like, you know, we both like coffee or we both like, you know, sports or something like that. And it'd help you find absolutely. Some of those pieces together to find the right event for us to meet at. Right.
There was that aspect of it. And the way that resonates with most people is that think of open time. It was what I would call the last mile for LinkedIn. And what I mean by that is that everyone has, you know, X number of connections, 1,300, 1,400, 1,000 connections on LinkedIn, but you never know when anyone's available. You never know, you know, is someone in my community open to sitting down and having a conversation with me, or I can share my availability to my community. Yeah. And so, you know, we started focusing from a go-to-market strategy on particular communities is that, you know, if you're part of the startup community in Dallas, wouldn't it be nice to know when people in your community, like, you know, Michael Sidoreski, I use him as an example all the time, right?
Yeah, because he's phenomenal at this stuff.
Absolutely. But wouldn't it be nice to know that Michael is available, you know, on Saturday morning from 10 to 12 at Nerdvana in Frisco because he happens to be up here. And he's open to anyone in the community, first in, first out, whoever books that time, comes and sits and talks to him for 2 hours.
Right.
So that's what that's the problem we were trying to solve.
That's brilliant. Okay, so you got this email, and you're mm-hmm. like, okay, great. Now I'm or LinkedIn message, and you're getting funding. Right. So what was the funding journey like? What did you learn from the funding journey? What would you pass on from some of your learnings from the funding journey, specifically here in Dallas?
I spoke with a lot of VCs here locally and angels. And if you remember 2014, 2015, SaaS was just beginning to become unsexy. And mm-hmm. AI was peaking, mm-hmm. and VR.
Well, AI wasn't peaking. AI is now starting to peak, right. I would say, okay. in 2017, 2018.
So the conversations were changing in that direction.
Correct.
Also, yeah. Early stage for SaaS in Dallas is hard. And so,
early stage anything in Dallas is hard. I would generally say that's the case.
You know, I found the interest of change last year or so, and we're going to kind of go off a little bit. You know, esports are becoming more interesting. Some AI is becoming more interesting. There, I've seen some successful angel around healthcare tech.
Correct. Yeah.
And so, from that perspective, but what I found was that, you know, I was actually of the mentality that we would try to bootstrap it as far as we could,
which is smart. Personally, that's my opinion.
It's hard, and you know, my, I think culture comes into play a lot for me, mm-hmm. and what I mean by that is that I believe in slow and steady over time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it took us a year to get the platform ready. Okay, fine, fair enough. You know, so that was 2015, 2016, we brought on our first customer, the Dallas Entrepreneur Center, which was, you know, it's a marquee customer here in Dallas to have the deck on board.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And I think you used it it was a system that helped us design or do the mentor hours, right?
Absolutely right, for the mentoring hours. And, you know, the idea behind that was, you know, being a strategy consultant, I was trying to find other companies that have done something similar.
Right.
So Dropbox is a phenomenal example, which I loved. Dropbox said, here, Raj, you take 1 gig for free. Here, Jax, you take 1 gig for free. We go back to our respective companies. We like it, and we tell our managers, hey, we like this. So similar with the Dallas Entrepreneur Center, we were able to help them with their mentorship program, but we were also able to get people from different industries onto the platform. And so I was speaking to CPAs, I was speaking to attorneys, I was speaking to people from all different companies about how open time could fit into their organizations because the deck was using it for their mentoring platform.
So that makes a lot more sense. Okay. And so now you've got customer validation too, right? So mm-hmm. that's a huge piece of what every entrepreneur is taught, right?
Right.
Hey, you have now talked to market validation. How did that market validation go for you, especially at the deck?
It went well. The deck was using it. The treehouse was using it. We had UTD Innovation Center on board. We had the Stoke lined up. We had the McKinney Works lined up. And so people were seeing the value. In fact, people still understand when I explained to them what it was. They still understand inherent value, if not more now today than they did a year or two ago.
Yeah, maybe you're ahead of your time, it sounds like.
I feel like to a certain extent we were. And, you know, people have asked me in the last few months, would you build it again? And I said, well, I would build it again. I would do it differently. But absolutely, I would build something like that again, because I still see the need for that out there.
Oh, have you seen the app IRL or in real life?
I've heard of it.
Okay.
Yep.
The only thing I would say about them is if anybody's used them, their text messaging platform is horrendous.
Really?
Because it will blow up your text messaging for like an hour for no evident reason other than to send you annoying garbage messages, yeah, spam messages. Which is a terrible user experience.
So my entire vision for our application was that I don't want people spending time in their phones or online, right? And so the only notification you would get is that when someone in your community was available. And that's it. You see who's available, you want to meet with them, great, you're in and out in a heartbeat.
Yeah, no, and that was I think the best part about your platform. So how did you go about finding a technical co-founder? Because you are not a technical person, like you said.
Correct.
You're a strategy person, a business person, everything but technical.
Right.
So you don't. The one downside on this is you can't code. So how did you find the right person? And what are something that somebody who's looking for a technical co-founder should go find?
So I started interviewing technical co-founders, I think it was September of 2014. And I finally came across someone that I thought, you know, would be a good fit for me. And him and I had several, you know, conversations together. And in the conversations, I really wanted to convey to him, and I think I did a good job of doing so, that, look, I have a wife and three daughters that I absolutely adore.
Right.
Absolutely adore.
Right.
Head over heels for. And that they are my highest priority in this world. And everything else is second.
Right. As it should be. Family always first and then everything else second.
I found that there's some disagreement in that, and maybe it's in the tech world, maybe it's in the Silicon Valley thing, maybe it's the, you know, you should burn everything and follow your company, and you know, you hear about this all the time, that
yeah,
this
and it's also famous founders have done that too, right? I mean, Jobs has done that, and it's very well documented with him.
Absolutely.
How he left his daughter
right
behind, and I don't know how they patched that up or what the deal was with it, but that's very well documented. You're right, and I think that comes from actually more because more often than not, I've seen this because you and I have been part of this scene and the Dallas entrepreneur scene and in general just overall as part of the entrepreneur scene mm-hmm. for so many years that it's one of those things where I finally figured out, I think, the formula for it. And when I was younger, yeah, I totally would have been like, no, whatever, family, just go get work done, work done, work done, work done, mm-hmm. and then just go get it done. And as I see older founders, and you and I have become a little bit older as mm-hmm. well, and a little bit more gray hair and things like that, because that's definitely starting to come on me. But that's where I've seen more often than not founders be like, let's take care of family and make sure your life is straight before, you know, you get your job done, because the job's always going to be there mm-hmm. no matter what it is. That company's going to be there. Now there are, that's not to say that they're not going to be some late nights, some extended hours, some other things like that.
Absolutely.
That's fine. But at the same time, you're right. There's got to be a balance. And I think that more often than not comes from just a younger person that doesn't have those connections to worry about.
Right. And so the way I look at my home is my sanctuary.
Right.
It's the place where I want to go back to and I love to go back to.
Right.
And I feel like if that is unsettled, that's when in my experience, that's when minds and bodies go astray.
Right.
And so I love spending time with my girls, and I bookend my day with my girls most of my days. You know, wake them up, put them to bed. Everything between, you know, between 8 and 9 and you know, 5 o'clock is fine. It's fair game. And again, maybe it's a cultural bias. Maybe I read too many biographies, but I think about people that, you know, built huge businesses 100 years ago, you know, before electricity came
yeah.
along, before they had nighttime working hours, and they were able to do and create depending on, you know, where the focus of the energy was. And so that was and is the cadence of my life. I feel like I can do a lot of things in a short amount of time just because, again, if I rewind the conversation, I'm not on socials, I'm not reading the news. When it comes to doing something, I can give it hyper focus and bring things to fruition even in the time that I have allocated to it.
That makes sense. So you found a co-founder,
mm-hmm.
and you got it coded.
Mm-hmm.
Was it part of one of the Startup Week events too? I feel
no,
like
it was,
powered it.
It was going to be, but then there was another company here locally that had a big challenge. It was the 2016 Startup Week, I believe it was. And we didn't want our brand to be confused with that other brand. And so we decided not to be part of Startup Week for that reason.
Okay.
So there was a big, I think it was 2016 Startup Week, where there was another scheduling company here locally.
Right.
That really, there was a lot of challenges.
It was not you guys. So your co-founder and you, since you left recently, mm-hmm. You know, what lessons did you guys learn as along the way for some of the challenges you faced?
So
I'll rephrase it this way, because everybody's like, oh, we have a million challenges. There's too many to speak of. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to pass on something to somebody who's building something, that's the main reason I started this podcast, as we talked about earlier.
And right.
For those, I remind my listeners almost on a weekly basis at this point. You know, one of the things that I put this together for was two or three major kind of reasons, right? One is kind of get people resources that they normally never have, mm-hmm. right? So get access to you either by listening to this podcast, mm-hmm. or find out a way to, you know, contact you either by LinkedIn or...
Sure.
Twitter or something like that, which those will be all in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was like, you know, lessons learned so they don't hit their head on that same lesson, or how do they find those resources or whatever it is for whatever they're going to build, and then encourage people to build those things, right? So I think those are kind of major kind of things that people should do.
Sure.
That being said, is let's pick like learning over many, many episodes at this point.
Sure.
What are like two of the biggest lessons you feel like you've learned? One being non-technical, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that people don't realize are going to bonk their heads on, yep. on the non-technical
Absolutely.
Side. And then one being technical, like what is that lesson that you learned about the technical side, you know, in something that you wish you'd seen or wish you could not necessarily do differently, but next time if you were to do this,
sure.
do this differently and not run your head into that.
So let me start with the non-technical first, okay?
Right.
I would highly recommend you find someone and you work together with them, even for a week or two or three, on a short, small project. So you can learn their cadence and they can learn your cadence. And when you tell them what's important to you and when they tell you what's important to them, within 2-3 weeks to a month, that'll really surface if those things are really important to them.
Right.
So again, from a cadence perspective, from a prioritization standpoint, you know, I think that learning to work together with someone, I don't have to work the same as you do, but I just have to understand and appreciate this, how you operate.
Well, not only appreciate and operate, right? I would also say that one of the other things that I've learned over time is communication styles as well, right?
Absolutely.
That's a huge piece. It's, you know, you prefer to text, I prefer to call, that mm-hmm. may cause some sort of, but you can kind of get over that.
Absolutely.
Or email versus text versus half a dozen other ways to get through mm-hmm. things. And to your point, cadence is huge, because some people think, oh, everything requires an immediate response, where some people are like, well, I got that message. I don't
well
have
said.
To say
right.
anything because I got the message. And then the next message I send on is going to be there for the next task. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely agree. That's a huge thing. And I didn't even think about that, is, you know, picking a simple, small little project saying, let's stand up, you know, a couple of administrative things together.
Right.
And that's huge. That's small, and it's very easy to get done. And it's not, let's go tackle this big world-changing, cancer-solving problem
right
away.
So right? Even from a biological standpoint, so I wake up at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, God.
And so literally by, you know, 5, 6 p.m., like I can
You're
tell
dead.
You, like cognitive, by midday, I'm 8 hours in.
Yeah.
Okay. So my best decisions are going to be made in the morning. Cognitively, by 5, 6, 7 p.m., I'm not there. And so I know myself well enough to say I shouldn't be making any big decisions. Like if I'm on a call with you at 8 p.m., it's going to take me twice, if not three times as long, to understand what you're trying to tell me,
right.
let alone digest it and then respond to you in a timely manner.
Right.
I go to bed by 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Right.
So I tell people all the time, you know, if you want to have a meeting at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m., let's get to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so if you have a co-founder, you know,
Who's the opposite of that.
Right, and he or she prefers to work late at night, or that's what they're used to doing from a biological standpoint, then you need to find a way to come together. Maybe your call is at 10 a.m. or 12, you know, p.m., but you need to find a time where you're both at your peak, when you know yourself well enough to know that, okay, you can make better decisions at a certain time of day. So let's start from just a pure biological standpoint. The next part of that is that we talked about the prioritization in life and, you know, what you're prioritizing. And from, let's say, from a technical standpoint, as a non-technical founder, I personally, if I looking back, I say, you know what? I would have brought in what I would call a personal technical advisory board. Someone that I could go back to and say, hey, this is what my co-founder is saying, and can you please validate or at least give me some guidance on this? And for the technical co-founder, I would say that he or she should create for themselves a business board, if you will, or a non-technical, a non-technical board for themselves where they can say, you know, my co-founder is saying this, what do you think about this? So almost like one or two people, small personal advisory boards where someone you can go back, because I can't go back to my spouse and ask her these questions.
Right.
I can kind of go to my network and ask these questions, but someone that more formally where I can meet with them, let's say once a quarter, once a month, and have these questions to ask
and,
them.
And somebody who's vested in the same interests of all these things that you are.
Absolutely right.
That makes sense. Okay, so that's the non-technical thing, and I think that's huge. What about the technical side? What would you pass on from a non-technical person? What you hit your head on, or would change differently for your next venture?
So, build what your customers are asking for, not what you think they want. And I know there's a jobs thing about, you know, people don't know what they want, but I feel like if you have an opportunity and you have a customer or someone that's willing to work with you in hand, the quicker you can build something that they're asking for, do that. Don't build what you think they might want or need.
Okay. So, So that actually goes back to a lot of what you learn off of Lean Startup Canvas and things like that. So I would say, what's the best way you've learned to get market validation? What's one of the big lessons you learned from market validation? You got an awesome opportunity with the deck, right? Like we pointed out.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the biggest things? How did you gather? I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this, right? Is how did you gather market validation in the most meaningful way possible for you guys to digest it? Because it's not going to be one catch-all survey. It's
right.
Sometimes, I mean, it's great. You and I will sit down for coffee, but that's not necessarily always the most effective use.
It's money.
If time. So money.
Customer says, you know what? We will pay for this. Let's sign a contract.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
It's money. So I'm working on a little side project right now, and I haven't brought it to light yet, but I've got 20 people enlisted right now, and each one of those 20 people will say have said, you know what? We're committed to giving you money right now for this product.
So they've gotten LOIs in place, basically.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yep. Congrats. So, okay. Now we've gone over all these cool lessons learned. Mm-hmm. I hear there's a book that was just done. Well, not just done. We're about 6 months late on this. But nonetheless, people can find your book on Amazon, which is exciting.
Absolutely.
So what is this book and what's it about? And,
sure.
And so, what brought the book about?
So earlier in the conversation, I think, I don't know if you were offline at the time, I said, I have the ability to bring things to life. And so back in 2015, while I was doing open time, I was still doing some consulting. And I'm consulting also from a business perspective, but also from a personal perspective. And in December of 2015, three times in a row, I heard different clients telling me that, you know, some of this advice that you're giving us, you should really consider writing a blog. And I'd heard write a blog before, but when I heard it three times in a row, I'm a big believer in the universe speaking to you. And
right.
I said, you know what? Okay, Rod.
It's a sign.
Why aren't you writing? Like, the question was, you know, I'm afraid to write. What if it's crap? What if it's not good? Who am I going to write to? This the nonsense, right? But I said, look, if people are asking, just start, okay? And so I know how to implement habits. And so I gave myself a really, really low hurdle starting January of 2016. I said, okay, here's the commitment. It's three times a week, so Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning. All you need to do, Raj, is write 100 words. That's it. You can just write blah, blah, blah 100 times, and that's it, okay? But you have to hit publish by 6:15 a.m. because that's when the girls wake up, and so I'm not going to go back and edit and think about it, because if I do that, then I'm just, you know, ruminating on the same thing. So it has to be published by 6:15 a.m. So I start blogging first week of January 2016, and I need a persona, demographic. Who am I going to write to? What's the messages to? I can't just be speaking in my head. So I have a photograph of my three daughters on my desk, and so I start to write messages to them, the same messages that I've been conveying to my clients and people around me. So I start typing away January. Well, being able to sustain a habit over time with consistency, by August, I've written 22,000 words.
That's awesome. That's huge.
So the people that are reading the blog now ask me, have you considered taking your blog and turning it into a book? And I say, well, I hadn't, but now that you're asking me this question, what does that journey look like? Would you buy the book? We would love to buy the book. Okay. So I met with two publishers here locally. One said they would charge $7,500. One said they would charge $11,500.
Yeah, which is the interesting part is let's pause on that sure. for a second. Is approaching a publisher is not as easy as, not always, and more often than not, the books you see are not done by the publisher coming to the author and saying, we'll give you a fat stack of cash and right. we'll take the rights to your book. It's always the other way around where mm-hmm. the author, more often than not, pays for their book to get published.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I don't think enough listeners know, or even generally it's a known thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very common to think, oh, well, if you're the next Dan Brown, Raj Daniels, or mm-hmm. or whatever that might be, the publisher's just going to come seek you out and
right,
say,
exactly.
hey, you know, we're looking, we'll give you a fat stack of cash, we'll give you an advance on your book or whatever.
Right,
that's
exactly.
not the case. It's usually nope. the case after your second, third, fourth book, that's when they start saying, okay, now we'll make a bet
on you. Once you've almost created your own audience.
Yeah.
So the publishers told me that most of the budget that I was going to spend with them would be for marketing the book.
Right.
And so, you know, I'd heard about Amazon and self-publishing and CreateSpace. I thought, you know, well, what if I do it myself? What does that journey look like? I have the ability to learn things.
Right.
You know, I joke about being one of my superpowers is the ability to learn different things. And so I said, you know, I'll do it myself. And so I kept doing my blog. And then in 2017, I was at about 50,000 words. And, you know, I was having the conversation about leaving open time. And so I thought to myself, you know, now would be a good time to sit down and get this book out. And so Q3 of last year, I learned how to do the self-publishing and the formatting and the cover, et cetera. Did everything myself, just so, you know, when book two, book three does come out, at least I know the right questions to ask. Kind of going back to open time, at least now, if I'm going to start a SaaS company, I know better questions to ask.
Right.
And got the book published in November of last year, and it's been selling decently since then. I had no expectations for the sales, but it's really resonated with quite a, you know, my local network here, and people are buying the book.
That's fantastic. So yeah, let's get it out there a little bit more.
Sure.
So in the show notes, we'll have the link to Amazon.
Okay.
Is it found anywhere else in local bookstores?
No, not
stores
local
at all?
Bookstores yet, because the agreement between CreateSpace and Amazon, it's called For You From Me. And the title is because the blog started as messages to my daughter.
Right.
From me.
Yeah.
And so that's For You From Me, the name of the book.
That's fantastic.
And the book is constructed in a way where there is a blog post on one page, and on the other page, it's almost like a journaling opportunity. What things you've thought about when you're reading the blog post, some of the actions you took.
So you have space for notes for yourself.
Absolutely. And the reason that came to me, because I gave my oldest daughter a copy of my book. It's called Up From Slavery. And she came and asked me, she said, why are there all notes all through the book? I said, look, when I read a book, I like to make notes and, you know, almost like so I can go back and see what I was thinking at that time. And so when I created my book, I thought, you know, people that were reading the blog really enjoyed, like they said it was very actionable. And so I created an opportunity for them in the book where they can write down actions they took and the learnings they took from the actions, essentially.
That's fantastic. Or things for them to go do afterwards.
Exactly.
That's very cool. So now what? Are you touring with the book? What's the plan? You're speaking?
So I have a speaking engagement coming up this following week, and they've bought 25 books for that. And I have another speaking engagement coming up in June, and they've bought 30 books for that engagement. And so I'm seeing these speaking engagements that have started to, you know, arise essentially from doing the book, which is something, again, you know, equal and opposite action, unintended consequences. I don't know what the magic is out there, but, you know, the minute you do something and put it out there, there's a ripple effect.
Right.
And so, you know, people see that. I think people see when you're able to do something, they gravitate towards that, because a lot of people talk about doing things.
And that's kind of, again, going back to the podcast, the reason why I started the podcast. Mm-hmm. It just like you, I said, okay, I'm going to start recording. And at first I had a co-host, and co-host is awesome, but the two of us could never meet our schedules. Again, mm-hmm. It goes back to like some of the lessons learned. We just have very different ways in getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's a kick-ass developer and would always love to have him back.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those things where our schedules and life just happens, right?
Right.
But you can't necessarily say life gets in the way.
Right.
Life is always going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like you, this podcast, that's what's so exciting is got a hold of the
folks at Nerdvana, which they've done a phenomenal job and awesome thanks to them.
Beautiful place.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. It lets you, it's got a really cool kick butt podcast booth, studio, whatever you want to call it, that overlooks the coffee shop too, which is mm-hmm. not expected at all. You
right.
just kind of come up here and you're like, whoa, this is actually kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You can hear the guys downstairs and it kind of gives us that atmosphere of actually being in a busy coffee shop and everything else. And so, yeah, just start recording every Saturday and just start pumping out the episodes. And, you know, so what if a couple suck? It's okay. Everybody gets through it and
you're
get
learning
through
every
it.
Time.
Yeah.
Right? So quick story behind the book. I wanted to get the book out by the end of September last year.
Right.
And I had some challenges end of summer, August. My daughter got sick. We were supposed to travel. Little things happened. And I ended up publishing in November. And, you know, some of the people I've been mentoring for years, accountability, one of the things I tell them, and I don't know if I made this up or if I heard this somewhere, there's a lot of combination of information. But
right.
I said, look, what I find that people tend to give up too quickly, whatever project they're on. Now, if there's some market telling you shouldn't be making this, that's a different story, okay? But you could be too early, too late. But what I tell people is that, look, if you look outside, the question I ask is, have you ever seen a tree grow?
That is a valid question.
You know they grow. You walk outside, they've grown, but you don't ever see it happening. I have a 9-foot tree in my office that I bought at 2 feet. I've never seen it grow, but obviously it's growing, right? My children, the same way, I never see them grow. And what I feel like, whether it's the podcast, whether it's a book, whether it's a project, people start off on this journey, and because they don't see things happening quick enough, they give up almost too soon. But something is happening. On any journey you take off on, something is happening inside of you. Something is happening around you. Maybe people are waiting to see, are you going to do this? Maybe your body is getting in tune. Maybe your mind's getting in tune. It takes time to get adjusted to it.
Yeah.
People
no,
don't give it that
that's
time.
That's huge.
And so, you know, taking my own example, a book, could you imagine if, you know, September of 2017, I said, you know what? Well, I didn't get the book out, so I'm stopping now.
That's so much effort, energy, and work put into the book that it helps. You have to see it through. And that's absolutely definitely the case. Mm-hmm. I would suggest if you look at any major founder or anything else, it is a struggle to get to that awesome headline to show that things are awesome.
Absolutely.
It is a struggle to get to that next hurdle, that next hurdle, and that next hurdle. Even the big companies, like, it may look easy, the AT&T's of the world or the Verizon's or the FedEx's or whatever, but they're still at a spot where, yeah, they're too big to fail, quote mm-hmm. unquote, but they're not. There's still a lot of duct tape and baling wire holding lots of those big companies
we're
together.
All a bloody mess on the inside, look. I type it all the time. And the example I give, like, so I wrote a blog post last year before, and you know, you see a duck moving across the lake at a beautiful pace, right? But you don't see the feet. The feet are just going like nuts, right? They're just paddling, paddling, paddling. But you don't see that. It looks like it's so easy for the duck to move across the water.
Right.
And we're all the same way, you know, internally, and especially about business. What I've learned about being in and around entrepreneurial, even large businesses for the past, you know, 25, 30 years now, is that the nature of a business is to solve the problem of another business or an individual. And while it's doing that, it creates its own problems internally.
Yeah.
And that's just nature of business.
Absolutely.
The gentlemen down here have to please me as a customer. They give me a cup of coffee, right? But their kitchen might look like crap. Their books might look like crap. You know, their advertising might look like crap. Something might be going on. Something's falling down somewhere all the time.
Right.
But their number one priority is make sure my coffee is nice and served well for me. And
right.
That's the nature of business.
Well, speaking of which, they have the matcha you love.
Absolutely. I love the matcha.
Yeah.
Unsweetened
and,
matcha.
And it's unsweetened, which yep. is clearly a thing that doesn't happen anymore, which makes no sense.
People use syrups everywhere. Even for tea, you go pay and they use syrup, and it's very sweetened.
Yeah. So, yep. Well, it looks like we're about out of time.
Okay.
So any parting wisdom you would like to pass on?
So,
and then, well, let's start with any parting okay. wisdom you would like to pass
so,
on.
Whatever project you're thinking about doing, take some action. You will never know if the decision is right or wrong until you make the decision.
Well, now I would add on one other piece that
sure.
you said it yourself, which is take it in small bite-sized mm-hmm. chunks, right? You started easy. Let's not just jump into a book that's 10,000 pages or something like
right.
that or whatever it is. You started with, let's start with 100 words a day
mm-hmm.
and try that for a couple weeks. And then
yep.
go from there to the next thing.
Absolutely.
To the next thing. And then once you, it's just like working out. Like, I'll start with a couple of days of running and then run a little bit farther, and then run and walk a little bit farther, run and walk, like, you know, pretty soon you're at a half, and then go a little bit farther, and you're at a full, and then go a little bit farther, and you're farther along. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that's great advice. Just start small.
Working out is a big one for me. You didn't know me back then, but I used to weigh 260 pounds.
Holy cow.
And I've helped people through this journey. And what I tell them every day is that for me and for a lot of people, so weight loss has a higher recidivism rate than alcohol and drugs. And what I mean by that, people that go on diets lose weight within 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, you know, they gain that weight back and additional weight back too over time. What I tell people every day is that when it comes to weight loss, it's not about losing the weight, it's about keeping it off. And to your point, that's an everyday conversation. So what's a little thing I can do today? This morning I walked 3 miles before I came here. Like, right. What's a little thing I can do every day to keep that off? But to your point, you know, it start off with extremely small, manageable hurdles. I'm actually writing another book right now, and the book is focusing on habits. I'll go into it for 2 minutes if you don't mind.
No, keep
and,
going.
And so it focuses on habits, and it's the impetus was a conversation I had in January. A gentleman named John. John said to me, "Raj, I want to start walking 10 minutes a day. I need to want to get in shape." I said, "Okay, John, what does 10 minutes a day look like?" So he said, "You know, 10 minutes a day of going outside." I said, "When are you going to do it?" And I said, "Look, your day is 24 hours. It's not 24 hours and 10 minutes. What are you going to stop doing for 10 minutes to put this walking habit in? Are you going to stop talking to your wife for 10 minutes? Are you going to stop playing with your children for 10 minutes? Are you going to go to bed 10 minutes later? Are you going to stop watching Game of Thrones? What are you going to stop doing?" Because people, and I've been around hundreds of people now trying to change habits. People say, "I want to start this habit." And the question I have for them now is, what are you going to stop doing first? Because,
right.
Because that is your environment in which you are trying to seed a new habit. And if I gave you a tomato plant today and said, "Here, Jack, here's a tomato plant," you would go home, you'd get Miracle-Gro, you'd get potting soil, you would create an environment conducive to the growth of this plant. Now, a habit is the same thing. So if you're going to start a writing habit, a coding habit, a working out habit, is your environment conducive for this new habit to take root? Because if it's not, within 30, 60, or 90 days, you are going to fall back into the old way of doing things because your habit was not your environment was not there to support your new habit.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. Okay, so now something else to look forward to.
Thank you.
Now actually looking forward to this new book. So where can people find you online?
So I'm on Twitter, and what I mean I'm Twitter. My blog post that I write 3 days a week automatically post to Twitter.
Great.
So that's
that's easy enough.
At Raj_Daniels, and I get on there once a day, once every other day, and look around, see what's happening in the world. Best way to get a hold of me, you can go to my website, rajdaniels.com, email me through my website, or and you can read my blog there too. That's reach out,
right.
Grab a cup of coffee, no transaction, no agenda.
that's brilliant. No, and I will totally say that's the best part, right? Honestly, the amount of times you and I have had coffee, it's been
absolutely
so much fun, and there's so much that's come out of it. Definitely, we'll put all of that in the show notes for everybody that's listening. And thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.